gentlemen, right, and beginning the visit at about noon with Don McKay this Saturday, the 12th of October, 74. Channel 1 Right, beginning the visit with Don McKay about noon this Saturday, the 12th of October, 74. Channel 1 Right, and beginning the visit with Don McKay about noon this Saturday, the 12th of October, 74. Channel 1 Right, and beginning the visit with Don McKay this 12 about noon this 12th of Saturday, the 12th of October, 74.
The green car wasn't here, so I just assumed that you weren't here. I looked around and didn't see anybody.
Fixes just a little something over there.
I got
a rest minute. I've been wearing myself out.
Well, if I'm interrupting you something, don't let me slow you down. We went to town yesterday and had the doggoneest time with the car. I had been having some valve trouble. I took it up to Bob's and got that straightened out. And then the timing was just off just a little. A little too slow. Anyhow, we pulled in the market down on South Main and it simply cut out for no reason I can understand. Anyway, I tried to get going. The noise in the traffic, I couldn't hear the motor running. Well, anyway, the battery was low, and I had a spare battery. I put the spare battery on.
Sit down for just a minute, and we've got to go out here and load
this. I don't have to worry about it. Well, anyhow, to make a long story short, the carburetor caught fire, which is no problem to me. I mean, I know how to handle that quick. But the point was, it was right near a little drink stand, and a couple of fellas run out right quick. I lifted up the hood and went to get a towel, and you can take a wet towel usually, and if it's big enough, you can usually smother right out.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, before I could get back with the towel, they poured some sand in it. it put the fire out all right, but then I had to take the carburetor off. And which I'm glad I did anyway. It needed the grease had been accumulating on it. So anyway, but the point was, it took a couple 3 hours to fix it. But I was parked off the. There's a little bakery as you go in on the old highway, and right across from the. There's a big market on one side, and then the rock cabins are a little farther down, the old rock cabin. Well, anyhow, I went ahead and took it off and took it down and got a 5-gallon can with a half a gallon of gas in it and really gave it a thorough wash and then blew it out. I knew some people at a service station on the main highway coming out. So I went down there, and we got it fixed all right. Oh, boy. Margaret, Marion and Donna went shopping then, and they walked all the way to the supermarket, Pine Street Market, and back. But anyhow, I was fixing it, so it didn't bother them. They needed to walk, and they needed to do some shopping anyway. But, I tell you, that was something. I have it in pretty good shape, except that for no reason in the world, when I slow it down, sometimes it stops.
Yeah.
And I'll run that through on the, it's on the idler, I think.
Well, what do you think it is?
Oh, it must be on the idling, in the carburetor on the idling end of it. Now, I had been having valve trouble, and one push rod had worn off on the top. The thing had turned around, it was completely inoperative, and I didn't analyze it correctly at first, that this was had been going on for 2 or 3 days, and I'd run into Bob, but he'd be so busy I wouldn't ask him to fix it. But yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I said, well, I'm just going to get that thing fixed. So I took it apart, took the covers off and everything, and by noon he got it fixed. And then Sonny ran in just as he was finishing up. We were sure glad to see him. We don't see these kids when they're in college. We don't get to see them too much. That college course is one awful course. And I mean, it keeps them right on the ball hard. As if they keep the grades up. Now, this last year, he kept his grades just straight A's. For 3 years, he made that 3 A's, or I mean, 5 A's and a B, but. Right along, but straight A's were pretty hard for him. But this last year he held that straight A right straight through. And that seems to have something to do with, of course, he's an all-around person. That was the reason I settled up here when I was raising my family. I wanted to raise him in an environment a little like I was raised in. And then give him a real education. Now, I could have, when I was in the service, I could have gone to the Naval Academy, but I never considered myself a military person. I went in the Navy for 2 or 3 definite things. My sister wanted to go to college, and I could, by going in the Navy, I could send her an allotment. And, which she went 2 years in Roman College, Chickasha, and then came out to California. Worked your way on through USC, I think. But,
what else you want to go to the Navy for, Don?
Well, then I wanted to travel. And my dad traveled when he was a youngster. His father died early. His father was from Scotland. And they settled in Kansas. And there were quite a number of relatives that came over about that time that were related to us. But anyhow, he wasn't, I said my father was, his father was from Scotland. My father was born in Kansas, but anyway, by the time he was 21, he had learned the metal trade, and his father died when he was about 6, I think. Anyway, he learned the metal trade and saved enough money to go to Scotland on his own and make a trip. He made a trip to Scotland, visited all the relatives, came back, and he had a metal shop in a place called Weatherford, Oklahoma. Is this this coffee just hit the spot? I'm that's
my. Haven't got anything to go with it. That's right.
Oh, this is all right. You don't need anything.
I
honestly don't need anything to go with it because I got up and made a cup of coffee and ate some this potato flour. It's one of my favorites. Now, Marion is a very good, just an excellent cook, but she likes to take a good bit of time and. Years ago when she had the flu, that pretty well knocked her off her feet for a long time. And so we bought a just a used trailer and set up housekeeping over there. She always slept late at home. And I'm an early riser. But when I met her, she wrote a sure, I had some publicity in the Nature magazine, and she wrote for more data on the floating islands and the birds and one thing and another. Well, anyway, we corresponded some, and then they came down every year to St. Petersburg. Her dad was retired. And so anyway, things were pretty rough at that time here and pretty rough with me, but...
Yeah, the
30s. That was when the lake was going dry. I tried to get the hyacinths off the lake. I had a pretty nice thing before the war. But when the war hit, after the war, a lot of fishing camps came on the lake in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rough people. I mean, the guides and a lot of war. I wouldn't put in a fishing camp. But these camps were making money, but when things began to tighten up, everybody in there was selling fish, and that everybody thought I ought to put in a fish camp. Well, I understood the whole setup. I like a little privacy. I'm a quiet person. I like to, when I was a kid, we lived on the ranch from the time we were three until the First World War. We lived out on the ranch, and I don't know, I'm an introvert anyway. I'm quiet, but now I'm a great talker, but I'm still a quiet person. I like to do a good bit of thinking, and then do what I plan to do. Well, anyhow, I wanted to travel and get an education traveling, and also I didn't like Oklahoma. It was so awful hot in the summer there, and I thought we might find a better place to live than there. And so anyhow, after the First World War, the flu took my mother away, and that hit me pretty hard just at an age I was 13. And but we had lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Wichita, Kansas during the war for a year each, a little over a year each. And my father made a trip then, took a job in the shipyard in Oregon, and we were getting ready to move to Oregon when my mother got sick. And then she never did really get over it. So anyhow, after that, we had a shop at Ocala, and metal shop.
Well, how'd you get?
I said Ocala, it wasn't Ocala. At that time, it was in Custer, Oklahoma. That we had two houses there, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, lived with us all of her life when we were on the ranch. But anyhow, Dad went out to Oregon after the war, and we had really planned to move to Oregon, even though we owned this ranch and the two houses in Oklahoma. And he liked the Oregon area near Astoria. It was at Astoria. So I never got to go out there, but I did get to see the place. I took a leave during the Navy with a friend of mine that lived in Portland, and a very good friend of mine, a Norwegian boy, and I visited him for a couple of weeks once during the time I was in the Navy. We made a leave at Portland.
That's
beautiful country.
Yeah.
Oh,
how'd you all ever get to Florida?
Get to Florida? Well, when I went in the Navy, as I got out of the Navy, my sister went to California, came to California. And then my father came, there was a German farmer that we did all the work for about 50 miles south of where we lived in Oklahoma. And he lived at Wearsdale. I mean, he bought some property around Wearsdale and moved down, and he wanted Dad to build him some tanks. And so he was coming down here for the winter, and pretty rough in Oklahoma in the winter. And so anyway, he asked Dad to come down. He said, I think if you go down there, you'll want to move down there. A lot of people want tanks down there, these big corrugated water tanks. So my father came with him one year, and the following year, then he moved down.
Oh, I see.
So, even though we had the property there in Oklahoma.
And that was after the war.
Yes, that was after the war. That was after the First World War. Wait a minute now. He moved down. He moved down in 20, about, he first came down, I think, in 27.
Oh,
long in there somewhere. I know he was fairly well established in Ocala, down on South Main, but he didn't have his shop or his home. He just was renting both places. And I sent a cousin out from somewhere I really lived in Long Beach. One of his sisters lived in Long Beach, California. Well, anyway, I sent a cousin out, and he didn't get along. I think my father was remarried here. And he didn't like Florida, so he came back. So that was about the time the crash had hit anyway. I worked for a financial company in Southern California, a building and loan company executive. He was, name was Moore, and he was an expert in the field, but he was from West Virginia. Incidentally, my wife's from West Virginia. But anyway, he was from West Virginia, but he had formed in his life 38 companies that were all still in existence. And one of them, second largest in the world, he would form these companies and then sell them out to a group of businessmen. And he had five sons, all in their own business. So, but I'd been, I got acquainted with him by sending savings accounts. If a youngster came in the Navy and could save $10 to $15, $20 a month, he could come out with almost $1,000 in a 4-year period if he'd raise it, you know, to as much as he could get away with. And I only got 54 a month, and I sent 35 home. That was a top allotment you could send back. So, but anyway, this, I went in the office one evening, and I had 2 years to do. I'd been sending, helping these boys make allotments to this particular company. And I got acquainted with the president of the company. After hours, I went in one evening, and I said, I want to make the deal. And I couldn't take any commissions or anything when I did it. I said, I'll send you all the accounts that I can from the service, and I'll study anything that you tell me to study, and if you'll break me in on the outside when I get finished my term in the Navy. So he said, said, I'd like to have a dozen boys like that. He said, he told me a little about himself. He had five sons, and he was getting ready to start a company just about the time I got out of the Navy. And he did. So he took me up on it, and I worked for him until the crash hit. And then the biggest billing loan, the big billing loan there failed. It didn't actually fail, but the man that ran it, a man named Biesmeyer, came up $7 million short and got a year in the pen. That was ridiculous, but I mean, that's what happened. He had a separate set of books, and he had an in with the building and loan commissioner, and they didn't inspect him. And he was a very high-powered, efficient German Jew guy. Now, I had a lot of respect for Jews and a lot of respect for Germans, but there's some combination sometimes that go overboard in a big way. But anyhow, when that happened, I'd worked for him for just about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more. And I did everything that he told me to do. After I'd been there about 6 months, he said, you don't know enough about people. And so I want you to take a job, any kind of a job, laundry work or anything you can get, and learn how these people make their money. And he said, and learn more about the world. So anyway, he said, I want you to do that for a year. Take this job, and as soon as you master it, get another job lined up, and give them regular notice, and move on to the other job. I want you to do 3 or 4 different things. And that way you learn. I said, well, that isn't quite cricket, is it, to take a job and on the board? Well, he said, no, it's not quite cricket. But he said, it's the way of the world. Now, he said, if you show up late for work some morning on any of these jobs, the next day you're liable not to have a job. See? And they won't worry about you. Bet no one. It's you do the job or get off the job. And those things, he said, being in the Navy, you've overlooked a lot of things. Well, I knew that. And so he said, I want you to do that, and I did. And so when I worked for 4 different outfits, then the crash hit. I began to make money, though, and I could send the prospect in to him, and he put his best salesman on it. I was not a good closer. I was Keith Terrell. But in all the time I worked for the company, there was never one of my accounts that went bad. There wasn't another salesman out of 21 people at work that was as thorough as I was, but there were people that could make 3,000 when I made 300. I mean, they were high-powered salesmen, and they knew the field, and they knew people. But anyway, as the crash hit, then he called me in. He said, this building and loan, we got the commissioner to him, a new commissioner, and he went down and inspected him, and he's very short. Now, he said, that's going to make a run. her building on the state, because everybody, all of our competitors, all of our banks, and all of the people we've been dealing with are going to say, now look at your building now. And even though this is the first time a building loan has ever failed in this state in 38 years, everybody is going to say, now look at your building loan. He said, so we're going to have one heck of a time. He said, our companies are clean, and they'll pull through without any trouble. But he said, a lot of these companies will have runs on them, and it's going to be rough. He said, I can give you a job that'll hold 2 years, $50 a week, on the Long Beach office. And I said, well, I'll tell you, there's somebody else here that I had a very good friend named Ed Fleming. He had 3 children. I was married, but didn't have any children. And my wife worked on so. He said, I said, Ed needs that job badly, and he can probably do it better than I can. I think he's had better experience along that line. And I said, I think that I should go and help my father out in Florida, and he's been trying to get me to come out. And so anyway, I said, now if you need me, I will do the Long Beach job. But if you don't, if you can get along with someone else, I think I'll do it. May not go for several months, but I said I will go to Florida. Well, he said, no, I'll put Ed on that job. But I said, I appreciate what I've learned with you very, very, very much, because it should be useful to me. When I first went in, he said, if you spend 2 years studying what I asked of you and work with me a year, you will never worry about a job as long as you live. If there isn't one around, you make one. And I said, I taught my sons that. And he said, I think everybody should be taught that. And he said, his daddy was a coal miner, and he had a fourth grade education because he had to quit school and be the eyes for his father. And then when he was 21, his father had sold out the coal mines and wanted to send him out in the grocery business. But he wasn't interested in the grocery business, and so he took a job in the coal business. He took a job in the foreman building and loan company, and getting people to save their money, and went out on the horseback. Well, I feel a lot of your money.
Well, let me tell you, you got on here earlier than I thought you did.
well, I was, I hadn't seen you much. What are you doing?
On to Florida.
Pardon?
Got to Florida way before I figured you were down here.
Oh. No, I came to Florida in 1932 or 29, and I'm not absolute, or late 31, and I'm not absolutely sure of that. I was trying to check it recently with my sister, and I couldn't quite figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I was here in 32 when the earthquake hit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had, what I did from this land, I went in the auto cleaning business. I went home when the crash broke, and I had earned, $800 in one short period, one account of $800 commission. When the crash hit, it was an $80,000 account from a millionaire named Howard. We thought we were in good shape, and the crash hit like that, and there was nothing. I went home. It was customary for us to get our money every 3 months when the interest changing period usually, and we had a $500 drawing account between that. I went home. I went in one Saturday and learned that I would only get $40 that morning. That everything had crashed. So they couldn't lend the money, I thought we had $2,500 on hand, and I learned that I would only get $40. Maybe we wouldn't get the other because it was a run on our company like it was, and they couldn't lend money. Well, I went back down to Long Beach. My wife was back on a vacation in Oklahoma expecting me to send her money. I was thinking we were in good shape. Well, anyway, I went, gave the man I rented from, I gave him $30 out of the $40 and told him that my job had played out. I came home that night about 12 o'clock and there was a guy sitting there who wouldn't let me in the apartment. Everything I wanted had been moved out in one day. Another fellow had an attachment for my car. I knew Ford. We'd only made five payments on it, $200 down. But anyhow, it was ridiculous, but that actually happened. Well, I knew where the fellow lived. He had a 200 apartment house, and that morning he told me, well, that's all right. You've always paid in the past. I'm sure you'll pay now. That's what I said in the morning. But his wife didn't have that idea. I learned later. His wife they had a system of lawyers and a system for putting people out. They never even gave him notice. They just moved the stuff out. just went in and took them. Well, anyhow.
Faye, let me tell you, before we get off about that, I want you to hear.
I'm sorry if I told you up. I'm a natural talker and never stand on formality.
I want Don to tell you a little bit about his boy. How are you getting along out there?
He
was telling me yesterday. I thought it was back
short. He is, he made these straight A's, and the summer, or last summer, not this summer, but this last summer before that, he worked for DuPont at a pumping station up here. But then at Lottie. And they paid him $700 a month and gave him two nice trips to company meetings. Well, they wanted him to work for them, but he didn't like the work around the pumping station. He did good work, and the fellow that he worked under just took a vacation while he was there practically to give him the experience. They liked him, but he didn't care for that kind of work very much. What he did, he studied the whole plant, all the records for 5 years to anticipate breakdowns. They have two plants, and when something breaks down, it ties that plant completely up. It had been. Now, what they wanted to do was anticipate breakdowns on those plants, study all the equipment through the personnel and the records of everything that had broken down, and then have a thing and put it on computers some way now they know what's coming up and it's sitting there. They don't have to wait around 2 or 3 days for a 25 horsepower motor. Everything that they need that's likely to go bad is there, right there. All they have to do is put it to work. So, anyway, that was what he did. When he finished, I said, you can work for us in any plant that we own anywhere in the world. If you don't like this, we'll take you somewhere else. Well, but this summer, he took two or three, they have scouts that try to get people to come to work, but there was a job in the atomic energy plant at Los Alamos, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And my wife had a cousin living in New Mexico, and he'd heard a good bit about New Mexico, and he always kind of wanted to see it. Well, anyhow, the top job, though, was at $1,000 a month in this atomic energy plant, and it was a top security job. It took about a month or so just investigating before they gave him the job. But anyway, for summer, they paid his way there and back, and he worked there 3 months, and he had a lot of fun. They got him an apartment to live in. I think he had to pay for it, but anyway, they got him one. And another fellow that he worked with had two cars. This other fellow must have lived in the area. Anyway, he had two cars, and he gave him a key to both of them, and he said, all you got to do is put in the gas, and you can use either car that I'm not using.
So, how about that?
Wasn't that something? Well, anyway, he met a lot of interesting people out in that area, and he liked it very much, and he got a lot of side trips. There were a number of others there, and he had a lot of good friends, and they did some mountain climbing, and they got some silver, and made rings and all kinds of things. One of the fellows had a hobby of making rings, so they had a lot of fun. They made a lot of things like that. My wife is quite talented along the artistic things, too. Well, anyhow, then on the way, but there, another company in Texas, it's a Texas company, but it's an international company, and this is a job I think he will take, although it's going to take some doing. We kind of hate to have it that far away, but it's in near, not far from New Orleans, and it's out in the Gulf. They build these huge platforms. They have cafeteria and everything around where they're drilling an oil well. And they have a whole, everything under the weather. And even in these bad storms, they can run a boat out there, and it goes up way higher and the higher waves. A huge platform way up there. And cafeteria and living quarters and everything there. They don't have to run back and forth like they did in the early days. Well, anyway, this company inspects oil wells with a lot of very refined, high-powered electrical equipment. They put these instruments down in there. It takes 6 days. Well, anyway, the base pay is $10.40 a month. That's $1,040 a month. And then each time they work 10 days on and 5 days off and 10 on and 5 up. But anyhow, each time a well comes in, they don't have anything to do, their time is their own, except when a well comes in. But when a well comes in, they go take a whole truckload of that equipment right out, put it right up on the platform, and they connect it up and analyze that well from top to bottom. Now that equipment stays there, and they work intensely for 6 days in there and analyze that well from top to bottom with this electrical equipment. And this company is international. I believe it's in this country. The name is kind of a German name of the company, but they work in just about every country that they're dealing for oil right now, and they need help. And but anyway, three of them analyze that well, and then they're free again. It takes the ones that are there, then they get $500 bonus when they finish the well, and then they have a billion-dollar company. I forget, in fact, I think they do nearly $1 billion a year, if I remember correctly. It's enormous. I read they had a company booklet. And they make all kinds of meters and gas, connected with gasoline, have a lot of patents on all kinds of equipment for not just oil well, but for gas and for distributing it and all kinds of things. It's a some outfit. So I think, although we hate to have him over there, I think that it's probably the best job. He has two or three other offers, but this is the best paying, and I think even if he only worked 5 years. Now, they have also a stock plan. They give him some stock and one thing and another. And at the end, if you quit at the end of 1 year, of course, you don't get the stock, and then they have. But after 5 years, you quit, go anywhere in the world, and all the money you put in the stock plan too, if you don't want to stay with him. He went out for a couple of days with on one well, and it was a gas well they had just brought in, but they were full of salt water, and the pressure was so high on the salt water that they had trouble with their pumps, he was with this man that had been encouraging him to go to work, and with the three other people that were doing the work on the well. But anyway, he happened to know all about pumps, and he took this pump apart, and fixed it. There was too much pressure for the pump some way, and the pump wouldn't fill it. Well, anyway, he fixed it right on the job. There, well, he always was mechanical, you know. I had put in a bunch of metal equipment as he was growing up, because I think there's nothing like learning something as the old-time way of putting a youngster through actual experience is a wonderful thing. So many people don't get that now because there's so many people and they're just not set up to it. But that was one of the reasons that I set up a shop. And when he was about, well, in 57, I built a couple hundred hoppers for some people. And the main reason that I took that job was that I wanted him to see that we could make the equipment, and most of it, and then turn around and use it right on the job. And we built the rolls, and we built the nearly all of the equipment to build those hoppers with right there in the backyard.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
For him.
That's really interesting. And you just stick around. All I have to do is to go down to this little store before it closes.
Go ahead. No,
like
you don't need him to go with you.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, go ahead. Don't let me interrupt you at all. I must get back after a bit. There was a motor that he had. I located it, but I wouldn't. It was still.
Well, I told you to get a couple.
I know
of
you did, but I thought I meant it not. I mean, it's just one of those things. I may have some things down there you can use too. Now, I've been running through the junkyard. Ideas are where you find them, and I run through the junkyard once a day. The dump, where the city dump, and people throw away a lot of things that are parts of things and that are just talking about. If I see anything interesting, I pick it up and bring it down and stack it in my backyard, back of the shop.
Well, what kind of things you find, Ron?
Oh, well, pipe and all kinds of metal. Let's see, it's hard to say, old refrigerators, just all kinds of things. There's stuff that a lot of people have moved out, maybe rented or maybe sold out, and the new people coming in want to put everything in new, and so they just haul it off the dump. Lumber, a little of everything.
Yeah.
So I just run through there once a day, and I have a trailer, and if I see something of interest, well, then I move it down and back out. I tell people, well, that's going to be my pack rat department. But actually, it's an idea department. There are a lot of usable things. Lots of people throw away something that may be useful. But anyway, their ideas, you see how things are put together. Maybe swings, maybe toys. It's just a long time interest. I always was interested in most of them.
They fix just a little more water before you go. This is the first time I've stopped all day, Don.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to get a breather.
Yeah, I'm.
Let me
just
finish. I'll be right with you.
Okay. Are you doing any fun? Oh, I walked back I thought you might be in the backyard yesterday. I walked back and saw the two horses. They are just beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah, we've got a filly and
I saw the colt and the mother, I think.
Well, no, it's not her mother. Her mother's a pinto over here.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, I walked back. We boarded cattle on the ranch in Oklahoma.
Okay.
What else you run into down there? I have heard of some. Right.
Oh,
fine.
You'll have to come down and look around. I swear I don't even think about it. I see something that I can use. Now, I've been hauling some slabs. This gasoline situation a little rough along that line, but I want to build a few buildings in there just like I built them originally.
Yeah.
They've run down, but I hauled nearly all the lumber that went in those old tourist buildings from a sawmill back out here in River Styx. They had a sawmill back in there at that time. I forget their name now, the people live back up in here.
Patterson.
I think, what?
Patterson.
I think that was his mill, if I remember correctly.
He was one of my friends.
Was he? Yeah, isn't he a nice person?
He was a nice person.
He's not here anymore.
No, he died about 2 years ago.
I didn't know. Uh-huh. But we hadn't seen them very often, but they knew. Is she still over there?
She died.
She did too?
About 2 months after you did.
They had a son that was in the southern part of the state, didn't
they? Did you know him?
Huh? Yes, I knew him casually.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No, I don't believe I met his wife. I knew them, though. But I'll tell you what. My wife had a very good friend, Irene Combe, I think.
Yes, yes.
Did you know her?
I know who she is.
Well, anyway, I wonder where she is. Do you have any idea?
I think she's over at Jacksonville somewhere over there,
yeah,
working.
Yeah, that's what
Eva.
We know.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Marin hadn't heard from her for some time, and we've got to get in touch with her again. She was a very good friend of my wife from
she
my
was
wife's
a pilot.
Hometown. Was she?
She was a pilot.
She's retired.
She was a pilot.
A pilot, yes, definitely. Uh huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. She was, I picked up a kid, redheaded boy, named Joe Kreider. I don't know whether you ever seen him or not. I used to, kids come along and stranded or didn't know what they wanted to do. Well, I'd say, I'll give you a meal ticket and you can help me around a little here, and I'll give you what spending money you really need if you do a little raking and different things. And from year to year, I'd do that. This kid, I picked him up in the forest, on the, heading this way, and over toward the forest with the pack on his back. And I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going over to see the floating islands." And I said, "Well, you picked the right guy to ride with. I run the place." So he was surprised. But anyway, I brought him over, and he stayed a year.
Stayed a year.
In fact, he helped me build a. When we cleared out where we built the house where we lived now. Anyhow, Joe Kreider. So he still didn't know what he wanted to do. He was kind of lost. He had a sister that was married and lived in Washington, D.C. They wanted him to come up there, and he couldn't find anything there that interested him. He liked nature and the outdoors. And his dad was a janitor for a big school. I forget what town I used to know him. But anyhow, make a long story short, he stayed with me about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, and he read all my books, and just made himself useful all the way around, just like a son. But anyway, he said, I said, why don't you go in the Navy, pick up some skills, do a little traveling, and that way you can, that's what I did, and that way you can sort of figure out what you want to do. Well, he did that, and he got along fine, and picked up several skills, electronics and different things, and he was out of high school when he first came. Well, anyway, he came back for about 3 months, and then he took a job. He landed a job with a 66-hour company, and it was seismograph work. Now, he and I drilled a well, and we built a part on a house, and we did a lot of things. But anyway, I really liked boats, but that was when the lake was pretty bad. Anyway, he got this job with the oil company, and he got where he was making some $800 a month on seismograph work. There were a crew would work, 15 or 20 of them, and they worked straight through, and then they all take off for a certain length of time. Well, anyway, long as 63, when the World Fair was on, I wrote him a letter that I was kind of loose end. The old car wasn't very good, and I'd kind of like to make a trip around the state. But I just mentioned that in a letter, just telling what things were going on. Got a letter right back. He said, "I've got leave coming, and I just bought a brand new car." And he said, "As soon as I can promote the leave, I'll be out, and we'll take a trip over the state." And then he went. Well, he came on over. And so then he went back, and in about a month or so, I got another letter finally. He said, "I'm going to take a flying course, and I'm thinking of going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, take a flying course, and I'd like to leave my things at your place in Florida." Well, we wrote right away then, and Irene Crum was on the airfield over here, and so we wrote right back and said, "Oh, why don't you, it's all right to leave your things here, but why don't you take the course here too?" Well, I came right on through, went over and went to school at the airport over there.
Is that right?
Yeah, and completed his course, and took an instructor's course, completed that, and went on down to St. Petersburg and took the final test, and passed them all the way through, and then took a job with the Audubon Society, and it paid a whole lot less money, but gave him a chance to do some flying. And then he met a girl that he liked and married her, and they got a couple of kids, maybe three now, at least they got two, and live in back in Pennsylvania, not too far from his hometown. And he's working for Continental Can. And doing real well.
And you ran into him out in the park.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, then when he was learning to fly, after he got his license, he was getting hours.
With
he used to take Sonny out, and they'd go out flying.
Yeah.
And they go down to the airport and rent a plane. And,
oh, I'm glad you dropped by, Don.
Yeah, well, thank you. I didn't mean to talk to you to death, but I thought I always enjoyed talking with you. And
what was that you were telling me when you were when you got into the service?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to give you these jobs because you'd had been in the military training.
Yeah. Oh well, I went in the on drilling. I never liked to drill, even though I was in military school. I did it because it was a regular thing to do. But I did whatever was necessary, and I was working my way in the military school. I went. I had at home. I'd been working at a bakery at night. A baker, a fellow named Wayne Turley, and he was a good baker and owned his own shop. I helped Dad some in the daytime, but and I was going to school. But anyway. He had a job at night where you could, I'd go in at 12:30 and I'd mix 200 pound of bread. I'd set the alarm clock and in an hour I'd punch that down. I'd set it again, another hour or so I'd punch it down. Then I'd go into school. I'd punch it down and go into school. He'd come in then about, I think about 8 o'clock. Anyway, he'd come in and put the bread in the, I'd light the ovens and they'd be hot, and he'd go to, he'd do the, bake the bread. All right. Then in the evening, I'd sometimes come in and I'd help him wrap it if that was needed, a different thing, but for a little while, and then go about my own. But anyhow, I'd been doing that job. I did it for one school term, actually my mother day. And got along real good with him. Well, anyway, I told him another fellow had been in the Navy that I knew pretty well there, a pretty nice sort of fella. And so he, I had talked about the Navy there. But anyhow, another boy named Crow, his father had had one son that wasn't right. He was way off. He's a morph of dad, I think. One of these kids that looks elderly, you know, or young, a good kid too. But anyhow, then this other boy, there's two boys in this Crow family. This Crow had been chief of police in the little town where I was. He'd been a lot of different things. I forget what all he did, but sort of a. Well, anyway, the point was, he was one of the main people lived in our hometown. He used to say, I'd give anything in the world. I never got in trouble like most of the kids do. So he used to say, he always, Crow was a guy that always believed in kids. But and his kids had cars and everything. And but this one boy had gone to the military school, the older boy, and he got kicked out, got in some trouble over there. Not bad, but enough to, a lot of kids are just that way, and rowdy, you know, and, but anyhow, I went to see him, on the military school, and, he said, well, he said, a lot of guys go over there that just go over there and have a big time, their folks have plenty of money, and they just send them over there, but he said, there are a lot of fellows over there that work their way, too, and he said, Colonel Barrett is a very fine person, and he said, now, I went over there and got kicked out because I was just disorderly. We'd go downtown at night and different things and play cards and gamble and one thing and another. But he said, you can, if you want to go to school, I think you can get and give you, let you work your way through. So I talked over with my father and with Turley, Wayne Turley that I was working for, and he said, well, I've got a brother-in-law in that hometown in Claremore that's got a real bakery. He said, this is just a one-horse bakery, but my brother-in-law has a bakery almost 10 times as big as this, and he said, that's a bigger town. He said, I'll give him a ring, and darn if he didn't go and phone him. He said, I told him what I'd been doing, and he said, and when he finished on the phone, he said, you can go over there and get your job at the school, and he said, the day you get in, you'll have a job at the bakery. So I went over, and I met those people. They were all nice people, and I went on up to see Colonel Barrett, I told him I didn't have any money except $100 that I'd saved, or I'd sold. I had a Model T Ford and I sold it. And he said, he said, well, now all the jobs are taken from last year. And I said, well, that's how I got a job in town. He said, I understand. I said, I understand some people can work in town and come up here. He said, you really want to go to school, don't you, Mac? And I said, well, that's what I come over here for. Well, he said, we have never turned down anyone that wanted to go to school. He said, we've got a lot of boys here. Their parents are wonderful people. And he said, they've they're a little bit unruly, and they put them up here more or less for us to keep lined up. But he said, boys that want to go to school, a lot of them just don't want to go to school. See, they're just here because they have to be. But he said, we wouldn't. If you want to go to school, you can go. And he said, you just put your deposit your $100 and draw your uniforms and start in. And he said, and I don't think you ought to work in town. He said, just go ahead and don't worry about anything, and we'll make you a job, but don't count on a job for a month or so. So at the end of the month, I went around to see him, and my grades were pretty good. I told him to start with that I'd been upset for a year or two, and my mother had been sick a year and a half, one thing or another, and my grades were just terrible. Although I wasn't in trouble, my grades were bad. So, well, at the end of a month, I went to see him again. He said, well, I haven't found any job, but he said, your grades are right on the money. All the instructors say that you're coming on fine. And he said, there's an old fellow that washes glasses down in the kitchen. He said, go down and give him a hand for a couple hours every evening, and we'll give you credit for about $40 a month on that. And then we'll gradually find something else so that you won't be getting behind. So he did. And I went down and did that. And after I'd been there a little while, the cook wanted me for the cook's helper. That was a job all of them tried to get.
Is that right?
He was hard to get along with. This cook was a funny fellow. He was the hottest tempered person I believe I had ever seen. When you're cooking for nearly 300 people, it's one quite a job and using help. But he was hard boiled and unreasonable, and seemingly in many ways everybody was afraid of him. But I got along with him. And this funny thing, there was an Indian boy named, I forget his first name now, Bowles. I think I'm anyway. He was from Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Anyway, and he was a good friend of mine. He said, I know the secret of getting along with the cook. And I said, something else happened. There were a lot of guys looked down on guys that were working their way. See, they had money, and there was some prestige there. And this rolled along for a little ways, and up until the Christmas time when this happened. Anyway, the one guy that was just unruly, they had a lot of regulations, and there was a certain amount of hazing. Anyone could make you sweep out his room, but you didn't have to sweep out his room. All you had to do was tell him, no, I won't sweep your room out. But if you did, you had to bend over and let him beat you with a broom, you know, as much as he took a notion to you. But this one guy, he ran it in the ground to get bit. And so after I got this boy said on the thing, we were up in study hall one day, and someone was throwing erasers, one thing or another, and threw a racer and hit this friend of mine, this Indian, part Indian boy, and he was working his way through Bowles. So he got up and went over to this guy, and he said, Bland, said, I'm not afraid of you. I can lick you any way you want to take it, any way, shape, or form. And he said, if you throw another eraser at me, I will do it. Well, afterward, I said, this guy had been, he'd slap you in the face and do all kinds of damn things. And I'd been letting him get away with it and because I wanted to get along with everything. So then I went over, I talked to Bowles afterward, and I said, I thought that guy was tough. He said, no, he's not tough, he just acts tough. He said, he drinks too much, and he's just no damn good in any way in the world. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do one of these days. I'll just call his bluff, too, then. I won't put up with that anymore from him. So, but then I thought, well, I better check with the commandant. So, because he was getting on me pretty hard over at the barracks. And I went to the Colonel Barrett, and I said, with many reasons, then he got me a new job, too, sweeping out the, taking care of the laboratory and putting everything in its place in the chemistry laboratory, and sweeping the floor and not breaking things and so on and so forth. And that paid 40 months. I went over to see him, and there was a spare room over there. I asked him if I could move over to the other barracks over here. And he said, you got a problem over at the barracks? And I said, well, I don't have a problem, but I said, looks like I might have. He said, who is it? And I said, well, it's Bland. Been riding me pretty hard, and I said, I don't want to get in any trouble. And he said, don't worry about that a bit in the world. He said, if he bothers you, Overland, just turn around and do whatever you have to do back to him, and forget the formalities. You don't have to live up to those things. And, he's overbearing. He said his parents are some of the finest people I ever knew, but he said he's completely overbearing and he's given us a lot of trouble. He said we'd have kicked him out of school long ago, but he said his parents are friends of mine and they're good people. And he said, but if you put him in his place, he'd stay. So I said, well, then, all right, I won't worry about it. So the next time Bowles, they had a flu epidemic there, too. And some fellas were sick, and Bowles sent for some ice cream. And I had charge of the ice cream out of hours. So I sent over, he sent a little old kid over, told me he wanted some ice cream. It's about 11 o'clock. I said, yeah, you tell Bowles that he's no better than anybody else. He can get his ice cream along at mealtime like everybody else does. I got the word. Come on over. What they did, they had an empty room. And any time two people had a disagreement, one can call the other in the room. The other one goes in, he stays at the back of the room, and you come in, lock the door, and the one that opens the door gets out. You're not allowed to use knives or clubs or anything like that, but you just have it out. So he called me in the room, and I went over, and he was standing there with his arm folded on in the back of the room. Now, he'd been just giving me hell, and he slapped my face half a dozen times, things like that, and I wouldn't hit back for this reason. Shoot, I went in and locked that thing, turned right around, grabbed his both arms, and slapped him that way and hit him two or three times in a row, and he just melted it. He was so surprised he didn't even know what happened. I know, because everybody in school, if you get in there, was in there to climb up to look in the classroom. Well, everybody complimented me, including the teachers. I was slender and rather frail and at that stage of the game, and I was one of the smaller people of the school. I gained 30 pounds the first month, though, I was there. But anyhow, I looked at that guy, and that really gave me a lot of publicity in the town. They ran into trouble thereafter with him.
Yeah.
None whatever. Those things are good for kids now.
No bad feelings.
No. No, you weren't supposed to. No, whenever you put it up right there, and that was over. No bad feeling. If you had any bad feeling, you better not admit it. That was it. Well, I went on, and then I after school, I stayed there and we cleared that, cleaned up the school. I mean, just a lot of things as they closed it up. And the, then they gave us an old Pierce-Arrow truck to take a trip over in Arkansas. That's about, must have been about 40 miles or so. And a group of us went on a camping trip. Well, we came back to the school, and one little boy named Alan had been over at there was a big Tulsa Water Supply Company, and this is where they were damming those two mountains. They dammed up two mountains, made a tunnel under the Grand River, up over another mountain, and down to Tulsa for water supply. I think that distance must have been about, I don't know, must have been 40, 50 miles. But anyway, he thought it would be interesting to go with us, go over there and have a, do a little camping on our own, and then go with the surveyors and get some experience. And so we did. Well, anyway, when we got back, this kid had been over to this big, at Verdigris, Oklahoma, was a huge, where they made all this big pipe. This pipe were, I guess, about 6 feet. A man could walk in them. And one of them about as long as a railroad car. One would go on a railroad car.
Hmm.
And cement and all reinforced inside. They make big cages out of iron and then galvanized them and then put them up and poured the cement around. But boy, it was hot weather and men were every hour or two, some ambulance come, you know, someone sunstroke. That was rough. And $4 a day is all I got. So, anyway, this this cook had got fired at the military school. It had been so tough, and another fellow had come aboard. Come on. Well, anyway, when he sent me over there, this boy, Alan, had been over looking the thing over, and he said, no, there aren't any jobs over there. And then all of a sudden, he said, wait a minute. He said, there is a job over there. He said, I couldn't get it, but he said, there's a job. Don's friend, the cook, is over there, and he asked about him, and he told him, come on over, he put him to work today, get in. And so this is the same cook that we had. It was such an unreasonable person in many ways to work under. Well, anyway, the secret of getting along with him was speak to his wife, and if she said something, snap, she was the matron. This Indian boy, I said, I know the secret of getting along with the judge. I said, you be good to her. He worships her. He said, you be good to her, and you don't have to worry about a mistake or anything else. I'm getting along with the cook. That worked out as a very correct analysis. But anyhow, I went over then to this place, and they had a strike. Something over the food. But anyhow, they had a strike, and the officers that were running the thing, they just shut down the pay window and phoned for the owner of the company who lived in Tulsa. That was 30 miles. And he got there in about a half an hour or so, and a great big car. And he's a little short fellow, and he just went right in that bunch of angry men. You'd have thought that he was shooting to pieces or killing. And he just came right in and got up on the thing, and he said, now get me your leaders and tell me what the trouble is, and I'll fix it. Just like that. Everybody went back to work.
Is that right?
Yeah, everybody went back to work. It just cleared that strike up like that. But the officials, they were snooty in connection with the man, seemingly.
Oh.
And it was a little like the military set up, too, and they had their own mess, you know, and one thing or another. Well, anyhow, I watched the strike, and then I walked over about almost noon, and here was the cook come out for other thing. Hi, Mike. He said, are you looking for a job? And I said, well, have you got one? I guess, yeah, I'd like to go to work. And I said, I was looking for something to eat. Go in here and get your plate. And I said, do you have anything open? No, don't have anything open, but I'll make one. He said, I'm on fire. Stick around. I'm on a fireman in a minute. And put you on. I said, well, don't do it on my account. Oh, he said, I'm on a fireman anyway. I was just the way he was right before everybody. He just had no, that's just the way he was. And he never beat around the bush about anything.
Yeah.
And So anyway, I guess he fired a gun and put me on washing knives and forks.
Yeah.
It took the whole morning washing knives and forks from after one meal and a whole tub of them.
Yeah.
Well, I did that for a little while, and he said, that was all right. He said, we're going to set up a special mess for the officers over here. They'd been eating somewhere else, apparently. Anyway, he said, you can have charge of that, and you won't have to do this. This over here, and you can give you a little time to yourself. And I said, all right. I mean, he knew I'd do anything he said, so I took the job as sergeant in charge of the officer's mess, just to set the table and see that everything is sort of in order. And they had waiters that brought the food. I didn't have, you know, have to carry the food. But anyway, I took that job, and then I did some work on the side. I got my $4 a day like everybody else. And then payday, I helped a number of other fellows write letters. So they'd come in, and a lot of the men couldn't read or write, and maybe have 4 or 5 kids. That was pretty rough time, you know. And so I'd help them write the letters and mail them stuff home, things like that. It was kind of an interesting experience. Did that all summer.
Mm-hmm.
And went back to school. Well, then I decided that I would, when my birthday came along, I joined the Navy. And I joined the Navy. And I went over and talked over the commandant. In the meantime, I didn't know about it, but the coach there took a liking to me, and I'd even forgotten. And he made a trip clear across the state to see my father. He was in the following year, he was going to another much bigger military academy. It might have been the one Sunday. I don't remember now. I didn't know much about it. But he made a trip clear across the state to see my father, see if he'd let him either adopt me or take me with him to school in this other school.
Oh, is that right?
But, yeah, my father, I never knew anything about that. They didn't tell me anything about it. And then later I joined the Navy, but I didn't know anything about that until long after joining the Navy. But I never smoked, and of course I didn't drink, and I lived a normal, clean life, and it was raised like that. My dad never smoked. But and coming, even when I was in high school at home, it was a mile from school down, just about as far from Bartell down to down to the lake.
Yeah.
And I used to go home every for dinner. Didn't eat a whole lot. I usually made cocoa. My mother was sick for a year and a half, and I'd make some cocoa or I like bread and butter and cocoa raw for a while. We didn't drink coffee. But I used to run that mile. I had some other boys that lived in the same area. We'd run that every day for dinner. Never thought anything about it. Run all the way down. We usually, it was a little uphill going back. We didn't always run all the way back, but we'd go home for dinner.
Yeah.
We had a 1 hour dinner, and we'd go home and back. Well, then when I got in the Navy, I got along with these people on the drill. Well, I got along everywhere. And anyway, and I got this good job, and then I stayed with that. I think I told you about that. And until,
what was that? I forgot.
Well, I stayed there until it was time to leave, go. You had to go through training for 2 months. This job was that I took was wrapping up people's, all these boys coming in, about, I think sometimes as many as 2,000 a month. I don't remember just what. Well, anyway, there were a lot of them coming in all the time, 15, 20, 30 or so a day. Just give them a suit of whites, wrap up their clothes, and put their name on it. I had labels and everything. The Navy did everything by standard. And that was the job. Seaman on watch at the recruit house. A new man came in. You give him a suit of whites. And then he had to stay there, couldn't go ashore for 20 days. Through detention until they investigated him and checked his records and all. Well, then anyway, however, then if he stayed in the Navy, you helped him ship his clothes home. They weren't allowed to have spring clothes then. And if not, you, if he didn't stay in the Navy, well, then of course, he gave his clothes back. And that was all there was. Yeah. But that job I liked, and the commander on the station wanted me to stay on the job when it was time to go.
Yeah.
His name was Conover. And I, but I put in a request to go with my unit to see in this ship. And,
well, now you also had a chance to do a little drilling.
You go what?
You also had a chance to do a little drill work for him.
To do what?
To do some of that drill.
Oh, well, out on the drill field, that's
yeah.
how I got this job.
Yeah.
Out on the drill field, I didn't tell anyone anything about my military experience. It was just that I knew it. But out on the drill field, I did know to keep it erect and keep your shoes clean and keep your fingernails clean, keep your hair cut, and all of those routine things were at the military school, so we did them here. And I knew my manual of arms as well as anybody, and how all the drilling. Oh, we did a lot of drilling at the military school. We went on big parades clear across the state.
Oh, did
on
you?
A train, and it'd stop in the different towns. It was Governor. This fellow was Barrett, Colonel S.M. Barrett. He was the governor's business manager, and he was in politics up to his ears. So, but anyway, and they'd go across the state. This is a state school. We'd go across the state and as ROTC, and get out and drill and have a band, had a good band and things like that. We made several trips across the state just in the year and a half I was there. So, but anyway, on the drill field, I said, they were drilling, and this officer had been seized. He'd just come on the station. He was a chief petty officer, but he was rushed in. They were doing the manual of arms. It was from port to, from right shoulder to port was three counts. And he said, do that in two counts. And it was actually three, according to regulation. So I counted three, and so did two or three others the first time. And he said, do that in two counts. And so some of us did the same and counted three. He said, who was that? And I, get out here and show the company how to do that in three counts, correctly. And so I went out and one, two, three. He said two. He said, you're absolutely right. He said, you're absolutely right. He said, it is three counts. Couldn't be anything else. He said, but I said, I'm rusty on this, and I've been to sea for a few years, and I'm rusty on this. So he said, then he came around a little later. He said, where'd you learn that? He said, well, I was in military school, for a year and a half. And he said, well, would you like to be a squad leader? And I said, well, I can handle a squad leader job, but I said, I never did like to drill. So I've done a lot of it, but I just didn't like it. I'm a little bit sensitive, and it always worried me that I'd get the wouldn't hear the command. There was a lot of noise and a lot of radio, all kinds of damn things, and that always worried the heck out of me. And because I never did think as fast as some people do. And so he said, "All right, well," he said, "that's all right." He said, "we'll find something for you to do." He said, "Okay, don't worry about it." And but then nothing was said, and went ahead and drilled the regular way until Saturday. They had a big meeting on Saturday, and I told another boy myself up and gave me first choice as for a job that opened, and made a big to-do on it. Job opened and seen on the watch at the recruit house. I got the choice, so I took that. The other was keeping books for the thing, and I certainly didn't want that. So for everybody. I mean, to keep the cover, yelling for the, like yelling in the name for the, for your group. Well, so I took that and I liked that. Well, then when time to leave, I went to, I put in a request to go see, and Conover came down. Or no, he called me over and he said, okay, you're doing a very good job over there. And he said, we'd very much like for you not to go to see for you to stay. And I said, well, oh, I said, I have been, oh, let's see. Oh, I said, no, I joined the Navy so I could travel. And I had a good job working my way through school when I joined the Navy. And I have a sister that wants to go to college, and if I go to sea, I can get a rating. I can't, I understand I can't get a rating on the station. I have to go to sea. So I said, I want to go to sea so I can make an allotment, make my other rating, and then I can make an allotment to my sister so she can go to school later. Said, all right, McKay, any man that does his job in the ring can move ahead. And he said, you can go to sea. That's just like that. So later, I took this naval, I took a course, naval optical course in Rangefinder at Vallejo, California, up north of San Francisco. That was a 4-month course. And they just gave it to me, you know, off the ship. And then I caught the fleet. You know, I see. Anyway, I came back to the service and took the Naval Academy course. That was a 6-month course. Oh boy, it was hard because I didn't have a high school education. So I had 2 years and about 2 years and a quarter in high school. So and most of these boys trying for that had a full high school. Well, anyway, I made it, but I decided not to go, and I wanted to make the Australian trip. And also, it meant that if I went to the Naval Academy, I'd have to pull my sister out of school. And in other words, I couldn't send her an allotment on the next 2 years. And that meant that she wouldn't get to go. At that time, it looked like she wouldn't get to go to school. So that was that.
Now, what year was that, Don?
Well, I joined in 27. From 23 until 27. I joined the Navy on 26th of November. My birthday was 11th of November, and I went home for a couple of weeks before with my dad. I talked it over with the commander at the school, and he said, well, go home and spend a couple of weeks with your dad, and then go ahead and join the Navy if you think that's what you want to do. But he said, now, no matter where you are in the world, if you take an oath and you want to go back to school, write me a letter, or telephone me, or wire me. He said, I'll get you out of the Navy. And put you in school.
Well, now you were pretty young then.
Yeah. I must have been 17 when I joined the Navy.
Yeah.
You could get in with your parents' consent at 17, but I was thinking, I thought all the time, I've got to get that lined up too. I know that's right, I don't know. But anyway, when you're ready to own a ranch, there are lots of things to do. I mean, and then around the metal shop, too, we did work for other people. Almost everyone in that area had a trade.
Yeah.
They had their ranches and home, but there was something that they could do real well on the side.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. That's a good influence. I know that one guy worked with leather and another saddle maker, and another fella had we always had blacksmiths in those days, and I know we went to town one day, lumber wagon, 3 wheels, it was so hot and dry, 3 wheels, the rims got loose on them, and one of them was so bad we couldn't keep it on, and we had to leave it with the blacksmith and let him work it over, and he gave us a spare wheel and went on to town.
Uh-huh.
It took 2.5 hours just to get 9 miles to the store and back in the lumber wagon. Not much up and down hill. It was kind of hilly country, a lot of it, on the Canadian River. Well, I better get back. I expect my folks
better,
will be.
Yes, we better load
my
up.
My folks will be probably looking for me. Let's see. I'll put that motor on. I believe we can load it. I believe I can back around there, and I'll take that down and see if I can get it working.
What you gonna use it for?
Well, I think it would make a good somewhere. That would walk right through it. Put a frame on it. But I believe that would make a good cell motor. I have never owned a really good cell motor. I've had makeshifts a time or two, and I have one now that I work with a one-horse motor. But what I need, I did build one time. I built a saw and used I forget what I used on, but never did have enough power. But I did run away. I had a 14-inch saw, and I built my own frame right after the war.
Yeah.
I want something that if I want to get these slabs that are all different size, I want something that you put a heavy piece on there and give it a shove and see, walk right there.
Oh, yeah.
Someday I'm going to build that together. And I think that would make a very good saw motor.
Yeah.
It's 220.
And you can find them slabs.
Are they? Yeah, I know where to get them. I have to haul them about 30 miles over in the edge of the forest.
Oh, that far?
Fell the name of, I don't know his name. He got a nice little sawmill over there. Father and a son deal, and they cut a lot of cypress lumber. And those are beauties.
Yeah.
And anyway...
How much can you haul?
What is that? Oh, I've got a 12-foot trailer. And 5 feet wide in the fall. When I built those hoppers, I built this trailer in West Virginia.
Oh, did you?
I knew a guy that had a welder, and I started to rent a U-drive, and they wanted $60. It was after my father-in-law died, and I wanted to bring some trips. I was working back and forth, and Marion was living up there at the time, and Sonny was real small, and down and was born up there. Well, anyway, we lost twins between these two up there. But anyway, I went down to a fella's place. Went down to rent one of these U-Haul trailers, and they wanted $6 or $7 to start with, and I said, well, how much do you wasn't too good a trailer either, and wasn't near as big as this one. I said, what would it take for the whole trailer? $275. Well, I said, I can't do business with you, I'm sorry. So I went down to the junkyard on down, where there were a bunch of wrecked cars, one thing and another, and I went down there, and I said, you got a good set of wheels? And there's an old Dodge truck sitting over there, I can cut you. Set the wheels off there. I said, I want to build a trailer. All right. I told him what to do. And there was another fellow had real good at trimming things. And this fellow wasn't too good, he said, at that. So he had a piece of 2.5-inch pipe there, and heavy pipe. So I bought that, and I bought some angle in the head there, and one thing and the other. And anyway, I went to this other fellow that was a pretty good welder. At that time, I wasn't a very good welder. And I messed with it, but I wasn't good at it. So I went over to another fellow. I had him trim these spindles to fit that pipe. Got a nice job on that. And then I took him to this other guy and had him weld it. And we built the trailer. I built it big enough to put a 5-foot sheet. In other words, a 5-foot sheet of metal would drop right in and give you a 1/2 inch or so. Mm-hmm. Then you could buy for a floor. I used just one sheet of metal, and that's fine.
That's pretty good planning.
Yeah. Well, then a 5x12 trailer, 5 feet high, and then later I took the other parts off. Mm-hmm. But I made 7 trips from West Virginia now. And she had a lot of furniture and stuff, and I'd haul that trailer. It weighed about 300 pounds, so
yeah.
The whole darn thing.
Yeah.
There isn't any sense in having a whole lot of weight.
Yeah.
And I know I was over here at the junkyard hauling some ammunition boxes. They had a lot of ammunition boxes, and they were in their way one day, this junkyard in Gainesville. So I said, how'd you like to have those boxes out of your way? They had two or three big trucks that bought an army camp. All the equipment in an army camp, and they had big trucks moving in there, no place to put them. And I said, I'd been buying these boxes a few at a time, 25, 30, or 35 cents a piece. And I said, those are in your way, and you've got your money out on them. And he said, yeah. They had a lot of shells in them, empty shells, the brass. And I said, what kind of a price, if I get them out of your way, will you give me a real good price on them? I'll move them in the next 3 days. And my guess, that'd be just what I'm going to have to see the boss. So he went in the scene and came back out and said, there's 600 of them. We'll take $35 for the whole bunch. Just like that. If you get them out in 3 days, I said, I'll get them out. So I hauled those things out of that. I bet there were 100 people around me, that I gave ammunition boxes. Anyway, I hauled them all down there and got them out of his way. And I bought a rivet hammer for $40 in Tampa. And he had a whole bunch of rivet hammer and all kinds of miscellaneous stuff in a tub. And when I was hauling these things, I said, I saw that tub full of stuff. I said, what do you take for that tub full of stuff? I'll give you $25 for that tub full of stuff, and you don't look at it. He said, give me the $25. There were drills and about 27 air hammers, like 23 air hammers and drills and all kinds of stuff in that thing. So I loaded it on and took it home.
Yeah, you're a genius.
But I knew that they were nothing to him. See what I mean? When you got a whole army plant, and all you're trying to cut it up and get rid of it, and I knew it wasn't anything to them. I'd known them a long time. But anyway, I'm a great hand to trade around. But you might find something down my place that you need if you come down. Are you going to do any more farming up here, you think?
Let me tell you, Don. I ought to be doing it because, you know, hell, they even sell peanuts for $8 a hammer.
That's something, man.
And peanuts are no trouble to grow. I ought to have that damn gun place growing in full of peanuts now.
Uh-huh.
I've got a little garden down there, and that's all I got.
Do you know when to plant the peanuts? Are you pretty good at that?
Well, you can
you
plant
can
them
find right, out right quick, I
you
know.
You can plant them early or late or in the middle.
Well, of course, you got a problem on help. I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in here and that. That was that labor problem was the problem on the hoppers. Now I built those hoppers and did all right with them, and I didn't have the equipment when I built the hoppers, and my stepmother, when my dad died, she sold his tools. She really didn't have a right to, but I didn't argue with her. She had a life interest in the place, and she's in a rest home down in St. Pete now. But anyway, I didn't argue with her, but then that left me without access to tools. And all my life I've had at least a connection with the shop where I go in and build something if I wanted to. And so I made a deal with this Westomatic pressure, this fellow's name, over at Sitka, was building water heater, electric heater. Let's go out and get that thing on.